Hi, Daniela, Tommy here again. Sorry, I believe the call just dropped out. No, that's totally okay. I'm just calling up to go through your annual review with yourself and Dominic. Yeah, probably just do both at the same time if you guys are okay to maybe jump on speakerphone or
Yeah,
something
we'll
like that.
definitely.
No worries at all. Yes. Hi, how you doing? Fantastic. And Dominic, you there, sir? Right, doing fantastic so far. Guys, before I begin, I just wanted to apologize because we had Dana lined up for your review and she's had to go home for a family emergency. So, as senior advisor, I thought I'd just sort of jump in and help out. Easy. So, I've got a number of documents to go through with you guys today. Usual review process of sending the DocuSign pack. I'll send a different pack to both of your email addresses just with your own personal documents. And then what I'll do is I'll go through an updated fact find with you both, and we'll just do it combined. That way we can go through whatever's personal to either of you, but also any joint goals as well. Now, just before I begin, just for security purposes, so I'm registered with ASIC as advisor 1273105. Are you guys okay to confirm your full names, date of birth, and address, please? Perfect. Perfect, fantastic, guys. Alrighty, so before I send these emails through to you, just want to double check that the email addresses are still correct. Danielle, for yourself, we've got luca.daniela.a@gmail.com. Perfect, and I'll just double check Dominic's. We've got you at dominic.luca@gmail.com. Alrighty, now the way I like to start most reviews is just double checking with you guys. Is there anything in particular you'd like to get out of this year's review? Yep, just general update, make sure you're tracking well. Alrighty. Now, just having a look at your goals previously. So what I'm doing today is I'm just going through the details that you gave us when you first came on board. I am unfortunately looking at some older details. You definitely have updated a few things since then, but I'm just kind of bouncing between about three different systems at the moment. Now, you guys, at the time, I think it was about in 2023, Daniela, you were actually pregnant at the time, which kind of put you in a bit of a holding pattern with some of the strategies. Perfect. And so just double checking the occupations again, these might be a little bit old, but you're a student counselor and you were earning about 41,000 initially. Okay, so similar kind of hours. Yep, perfect. Student counselor, 41,000. And Dom, you're a graphics designer for the Western Bulldogs? Ah, perfect. Okay, self-employed. And is it just doing the same thing, graphic designing, but just for yourself? And now that it's kind of end of financial year, have you managed to have a look at like your tax return to see what your income's like at the moment or a bit of an estimate? Awesome. And from where you were with the Bulldogs earning around about 70,000, do you think it'll be much more or less compared to then? Yep, a bit more. And I'm just looking through some of the superannuation statements, but are you making contributions to super at the moment or? Yeah. Okay, fantastic. And when you go to do that, are you looking to set up like a wage structure through your accountant so you just pay a bit of like standard percentage, or are you just thinking of just working out maybe like a regular amount directly from your like sole trader bank account? Yep. And do you understand how the contribution system works when you pay it personally when you go to claim it? Okay. No, that's totally fine. So, with Daniela's employment, they would be paying SGC from the employer based on a percentage of her income, and similar to how some of the employers that you work for do. Now, when you do it yourself, you can essentially BPAY or EFT contributions directly into your account. And then what happens is those are counted as personal contributions. And when it gets to tax time, you can actually nominate to claim them as a tax deduction to convert them into a concessional contribution, just like if an employer had put it in. So you actually have to wait like the whole year to claim it, essentially. Okay. Now, just based on currently, do you want me to work off what's been coming in recently for the next sort of 6 to 12 months until you sort of go through all the tax side of things with your accountant? Easily done. And as far as the sort of surplus cash flow goes, are you guys able to sort of put aside some savings for any of your personal goals? Because obviously, one's working 2 days a week, Dom, you're self-employed. It sounds like maybe it's a bit difficult to put together some cash for anything else other than the tax side of things. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. And is there anything in particular that you're kind of focusing on for the next, say, 3 to 5 years that once it does stabilize, that you'd be putting the savings and cash flow towards? Fantastic. So the old figures for the mortgage, we had the house was valued at 850,000 and you owed about 250. Was there a change in property or has that just been slowly paid down? Fantastic. And what would you put the property value at the moment? Yeah, so you would think it'd be getting close to that $1 million mark from where it was a few years ago. Thank you. I'll put in $1 million for now until we get a bit of a better idea. Just as far as other assets and liabilities go, we had a little bit of shares between you guys, and a couple of vehicles. So what's the shares looking like at the moment between you both? Yep, so that's a pretty safe figure to put in as a bit of a round estimate. So kind of like 10 to 12 grand each in your own names. Kiddo. And then we had motor vehicles. Danielle, your was worth about 37,000. You didn't have a car loan at the time, and you had a car for about 10,000. I know that's a few years old, but what are we thinking with the cars? No, that's fine. We'll do a bit of a reduced estimate. Perfect. And is there any other kind of assets or loans floating around besides those three? Okay. And do you guys have much put away in savings or an offset account or anything like that? A bit of a rainy day fund? Perfect. So you're pretty well on a good track to finish off that mortgage and save up for the holiday once things stabilize over the next 12 months. Are you looking at doing any more lending at any point, or are you pretty happy with just knocking those two out? Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Alrighty, so assets and liabilities are all sorted for you guys. And it is just the three dependent children, is that right? Perfect. All right, so goals wise, when I look at the retirement side of things, we've got you kind of bouncing between age 65 to age 67 for retirement, because obviously 60 is when you can access your super, that's your preservation age. 65 is when you can fully access it. And 67 is like the age pension, retirement age through Centrelink. So some people usually get a combination of their super and the government pension and just live off that. What age would you guys be aiming at? Are you trying to go as early as humanly possible? Are you comfortable to work through to 65? What are your thoughts? It is absolutely so earlier if possible, but if you have to, a couple of years doesn't make too much of an issue. The reason why I bring that up is because when we're talking about how to invest and contribute to super in the meantime and how we're tracking, the idea is do we have enough capital built up by that age to be able to fund that pension past your life expectancy? Because once you've got it there, there's a certain point where we're focusing on the growth aspect while you're young, but you guys probably don't want to be in anything like high risk or high return at the age of 59, and then you lose half your super a year before you access it. You know what I mean? So there's an element of keeping the pace high if we're trying to retire earlier, just to get enough in time. Okay, so what we're really going to be looking at today is the combination of what you're invested in versus the contributions, and kind of set up a bit of like a medium-term plan, because you don't have to do everything today or this year, but we need to know what steps we can take or what you're comfortable or possible to take to actually get you there. Okay, so what I'll do is I'm going to shoot through these emails to you guys, and then I'll just go through the last few details on this client fact find snapshot, just to make sure we've seen if there's any other significant changes as well. So just bear with me for a moment while I just pop these emails through to you guys. Okay, and just while I'm popping these emails through, do you guys actually log into the Netwealth and Hub accounts to have a look every so often, or is it a bit out of sight, out of mind? Okay, do you need some help with the resetting the login perhaps? No, that's fair enough. And what about you, Dom? That's okay. So one of the things I'm going to do as part of the review is we're going to walk through the performance of the funds, and we'll see if we need to make any changes to the portfolios themselves. And I'm going to use a few benchmarks because obviously retirement is so far away. It's hard to project out 30 years with any sense of accuracy because your lives are going to change so much and there's so many variables. But we can at least say, okay, we're hitting a good average to track for the level of risk that you're comfortable with. Does that make sense? Perfect. So what we'll be talking about today, we've got a few funds. I'm just going to bring up your snapshots. Danielle, you've got HUB24 account and you've got a Rest Super Fund, and the Rest was being maintained for the insurance policy at the time. And that's what I wanted to double check, because the notes were saying we couldn't do it while you were pregnant at the time, but you do have a few other health issues as well, which from the looks of it does mean that if we go to get cover, there's going to be a whole bunch of exclusions where you can't claim on certain things. And yep. Yep. Absolutely. I'm having a look at a few sort of options here, and from those conditions themselves, I mean, it doesn't really prohibit you necessarily from getting transfer terms cover, where we kind of take over your rest policy potentially. So I was thinking of maybe investigating that if possible, because most of the time it's perfect for like the most common cases, diabetes, where you get a straight up decline in certain cases. And then with the sort of transfer terms, it's more along the lines of occupation and past claims. If you have applied for insurance before and they sent back a bunch of terms that you would get exclusions and things like that, it kind of prohibits you. So in that case, it might be the case where we should just keep it in place. But I'm also thinking of you've got the Ally insurances that you guys have jointly, is that right? Okay, so when I have a look at this, you've got 373,000 worth of life insurance with Rest, 71,500 of disability cover, 2,125 a month of income protection, 60-day waiting period, and it would pay for 5 years. premiums are very cheap, $370 a year. And then we've obviously got the Ali Group cover as well, which is mainly life insurance and trauma cover, I believe, like heart attack, stroke, and cancer. Yep. And Dom, with your side of things, I believe it was just the Ali insurance that I can see for the life and terminal illness and trauma. I don't think you have any other policies floating around that I can see. Okay, so when we consolidated you, there's nothing there in place. Were there any issues with the health or occupation when we attempted to get cover previously, or what are your thoughts when it comes to those types of insurances? Yeah. Okay, so I guess the main questions there become, if you don't have TPD and income protection, but you do have life insurance and trauma, those are the four all up, is what do we actually need to cover you for? Obviously, you've got the mortgage there, that's $300,000. That will be paid out by the current life insurance. If you think to a claim scenario, you pass away, the insurance comes out, pays off the mortgage, you've got $180,000 left over, plus your super on top of that. What does that look like for you guys? Or do you need, you know, extra cover to cover lost expenses or lost income, I should say? Yeah, perfect. So same amount, like if you get more cover for less cost, that'd be fantastic. If we can funnel it through super so you can get the tax deduction for life and TPD, that would be good too. And what about for the income side of things? Do you need income protection? I know you've been self-employed for, it's about 2 years now, is that right? Coming on 2 years. So usually once you've got 2 years worth of financials, like profit and loss statements, that can really help in obtaining income protection. Do you want me to get some quotes for that, or do you want to just focus on like life and disability cover? Correct. So that's like a monthly income replacement for the more short-term things over, say, 3, 6, 9 months, whereas your TPD is that lump sum where you can never work again. Here's $500,000 to cover what you can't do. Yeah. So there's sort of three questions that come about when it comes to income protection is you can get a policy that covers you up to 70% of your income. And these days they're all what's called indemnity. So you pretty much put forward, okay, I think 70% of my income looks like X amount. And then off the back of that, when you go to claim on it, you provide your 12 months worth of financials. And if it kind of lines up, that's what you get paid. But if the income's dropped, they give you a percentage of what it actually is. If it goes up, they can only go up to the maximum you've paid for, if that makes sense. Okay, so as far as that goes, I think that $70,000, you did say you might have earned a little bit above that, but I can kind of work off that as a starting point. So what that would look like is if I go $70,000 times 70% and, So 70% turn into a monthly amount, it would give you about $4,083 a month. And bear in mind that just like income, that is gross as well. So a little bit of tax comes out of that. So you'd be looking at something like $800 a week that you would get in the hand. What does that kind of look like for you if you're out for, say, 6 months? Gotcha. And there is also like a budget idea as well. Now, income protection, when it's through the super, it's only got a 15% tax deduction initially. And if you pay for it out of pocket, it's fully tax deductible up to your marginal rate. Now, one thing that you can do as a bit of a flip side that makes it a bit easier is you can put it through your super and actually salary sacrifice the premiums in, which is what we were talking about the contributions. So you can get some almost pretty much the full tax deduction that way. Maybe a way to go. Cool. And the last question I've got for income protection is just because there is a waiting period before you can claim, you can pretty much choose on average between like a 30-day waiting period, 60 or 90, where you pretty much have to foot the bill up until that point before you can claim. And obviously that influences the price quite heavily. So would you have enough savings to last a month, 2 months, 3 months? Because, yep. Perfect. So if I was to look at like a 90-day waiting period, that would make it a lot cheaper, but that would possibly be 3 months that you would have to foot the finances. What do you guys think about that? Or is that a bit too far? Perfect. All right. So I'll do up a quote for the 90 days and about 70%, and I'll see what we can do with the life cover and the income protection as well. And the trauma cover that you've got, $141,595. That's pretty well on the mark for what we usually quote when it comes to like medical expenses, for like heart attacks, strokes, and cancers. So I don't really have an issue with that level of cover unless you want to go above or below that. Perfect. Now, with those emails I've sent through, are you guys able to view them while I'm going through the documents? Perfect. So what I'm going to do to make things nice and easy is I'm just going to start with Dom's Netwealth account. Now, when you go through that DocuSign, it always starts with an overview summary, just showing you your accounts, and the one straight after that is your super performance. So for Dom, that'd be your Netwealth blue table with heaps of numbers on it, and Danielle, it will be your HUB24 account. Similar, big table, lots of digits. Can you guys see any of the figures when you look at it, or if you zoom in, or is it a little bit blurry? That is okay. Okay, so when I look at reviewing someone's super, first thing I look at is what risk level you're in. And I'm looking at yours, Daniela. You're in a OV5 portfolio, that's one that we've built, and you're in the high growth. So kind of like a 90% of your money in shares and property, that's your high risk, high return, 10% in the safer stuff. Okay, so I'm going to kind of benchmark that against an average return of, say, 9 to 10% over the long term. And I'm just having a look at Dom's at the moment. Customized high growth portfolio. And again, similar benchmarks around that 90% growth assets and aiming for the 10% and above. Okay. So looking through the performance report for the net wealth, at the very bottom right, it's got like a total net return after all fees and taxes, and it has actually hit 10.34% after fees. So pretty much bang on the mark there. Some of the options that you've got, you guys have got similar mixes between the different super funds, You've had some go up 14, 19, 30, 40% even for gold, which has had a fantastic year. And some of the Aussie shares have not done too well. That's sort of one option out of the eight. 2% return there is pretty low. So when I look at a portfolio, I'm kind of saying, okay, if there's eight options there, most of the time, one of them doesn't do too well. If three or four were doing pretty terrible, I would probably reset your portfolio and switch a bunch of different options in and out. Okay, so I'm just going to swing over to the Hub 24 sheet. Just bear with me. Okay, I'm just going to export a report as of today's date because Hub's got some pretty fast reporting. And we'll have a look at that. You're currently sitting at 50,202. And I'm sitting at 115,559. So when I look at age groups, most people when they hit 30 probably have around about 30, 40 grand in super. Now, it does vary quite a lot with like lopsided incomes and things like that. So seeing you guys with 50 and 115 is kind of what I'd expect. And you're probably 5 to 10% above most averages for your age. Okay, looking at Dom Super, pretty similar again there. He actually had a slightly lower return in his, 8.14%. And looking at the options, they're pretty similar. They've just been bought into at slightly different times than yourself. So when I look at that, Dom Super's had a little bit of a drop compared to the benchmark we're aiming for by about 1% or 2%. And if we're going to be looking at getting some insurance quotes and possibly insurance policies, it might be worth updating his portfolio because two of the options have done poorly instead of just one. Okay. Any initial thoughts so far? And when I look at the two providers, so having NetWealth and Hub24, it's not the biggest issue having the two because when I kind of look at them, they're both some of the biggest, I guess, wrap platform providers around that aren't aligned with the big banks. So most of the other providers are CBA linked or Westpac or NAB and all that kind of thing, whereas Hub24 and NetWealth, they're the two biggest independent platforms. They're fees haven't really changed or anything like that. So there's been no major changes to either platform where I would say, oh, it's improved or dropped significantly in the super fund itself. It's more just the investments we pick under the hood. Yeah, so you're with NetWealth as a provider and Danielle is with Hub24. And they're pretty similar. There's like a 0.02% difference in fees. They both have more than 700 investment options. They're both pretty similar. And most of the time when there's like reward award ceremonies for these platforms, for investment platforms, they kind of bounce between the two. They kind of trade places every couple of years. So when I look at your super though in the... actually, on the Hub 24, it's really this Bennelong Australian shares option that's kind of underperformed and kind of dragged it down just a little bit. Yeah, so that's what I'm kind of thinking, is that while we're at it, I might put together a statement of advice just updating that portion of it, and I would probably just do it for both of you. That way you're both in a similarly updated portfolio, if that makes sense. Okay, now we're not going to think too far ahead as far as retirement goes, but just to kind of tie you guys together, when we were talking about those goals of age 60 before, your initial goals were $600 for Daniela and $1,500 a week for Dom. which kind of puts you guys at around about $2,100 a week after tax, because it's tax-free after 60, assuming that you've got the mortgage paid off as well. So I just wanted to gauge, is that still the level that we're aiming for, above, below? What are your thoughts? That's okay. So I'm combining both of your separate retirement goals into one and saying, if you guys were together, mortgage paid off, and you had $2,000 a week coming out of your super combined, what does that look like for you guys in today's dollars if you were to retire today? Would it be kind of livable as far as living expenses goes with that kind of $2,000 a week as a couple in hand? Yep, and would that be... Perfect. And would that be able to cover all the kind of holidays or anything else that you would want to be doing, or... Perfect. So priorities-wise, I know this is a little bit far ahead, but just because you guys do have children, do we need to account for wanting to pass on your super to the children, or you guys want to just kind of live it up and spend it on the holidays, because that kind of puts us down two different pathways? Yep. They do. And the question is, how long does it kind of last? Because if you, let's say you pulled out 20 grand a year to go to the Europe yearly, then it would deplete a lot faster. Then it might be gone by the time you're 85, and then there'll be nothing left for them to have. But if you're, you know, more modest and you want to keep something there for them, we can try and aim to, you know, have them inherit $500,000 or something like that. Or would you say you're kind of like not at that stage where you're like, oh, I'll see how it goes when they're older? Okay, that makes sense. No, that's perfect, because it's pretty common that when people get to that age, I see it all the time with a lot of the Gen Xers and the Boomers, where the ones who are inclined to do that, they're kind of spending a lot on the grandchildren and, you know, wanting to help them save up for a car and all that kind of thing. So if that kind of sounds like where you might be leaning, then that kind of gives me good indication. Again, we don't need to retirement plan too early, 30 years in advance. Just need a bit of a gist about your preferences and personalities. Yeah, that makes sense. Dom? Yeah, you can give cash. Perfect. So on the super side of things, what I'm going to finish off with is just an updated risk profile with you. You've probably gone through a few of these questionnaires, but I just want to gauge how you guys are currently feeling. And then obviously we're going to talk about what the recommendations are going to look like, but just sort of see how you guys float between these ideas. So I'm just going to pull up this little questionnaire. Again, it's kind of like a mini psychological profile at the end of the day. It's nothing too set in stone, and there's no right or wrong answers with it as well. So time frame wise, because we've got the retirement age of at least 60 to 65, we're looking at that solid 25, 30 years away. And the highest answer we've got is 10 years. And that's because the moment you go into the more aggressive side of things, like buying shares or buying investment properties, it's generally recommended to hold them for at least a decade to try and get a return out of them, because the markets keep going up and down. It may crash halfway through and you need to have time for it to actually bounce back and actually get you some return on your investment. If that makes sense. Okay, now just answering sort of one by one, the most aggressive investment you've ever made, you guys currently own a home. You have direct shares, which is pretty Pretty brave for sure. Not many people take the plunge to buy some shares. Have you ever had an investment property or any other types of investments before? That's fair. And then when it comes to the idea of borrowing to invest, obviously you've got this growing family now, and you did mention maybe an investment property down the line. Would you ever consider, let's say you've got some equity in the home, you can borrow to buy investment properties, you can borrow to buy shares without going too crazy with it. Would you consider borrowing for property, borrowing for shares at some point in your life, or do you want to keep it a little bit more stable and just aim for property? Perfect. With the idea of inflation, cost of living goes up, and when we hit 60, 65, $100,000 is not going to buy what it currently does, and we need to account for inflation to some degree as well. So the question here is your willingness to take on a level of volatility, which is your super going up and down, to either keep up with the cost of living or try to outpace it, or not at all. Faster the better. Perfect. So, when we talk about expected returns, the answers range from 0 to 8% or above. And like I was saying, when you're in a high growth profile, you're kind of aiming for 9 to 10% or above. It does sound like, before, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you guys were saying you're happy to be guided by what we're aiming for. And it would be maybe a bit silly for me to ask, but would you be aiming for the highest return that you can get? Perfect. So the risk return trade-off means that your super is going to fluctuate a lot. One thing that I didn't mention when we were going through your portfolios is a lot of it is in what we call ETFs, which is a really cheap way to access stock market, property market, infrastructure, and gold. But the trade-off for having the low fees is it follows the markets very, very closely. So whatever happens to the Australian market, the American market, gold, property, your super is going to follow it up and down like a bit of a yo-yo. That means that in any single year, it could go up 10, 20, or 30%. Maybe that'll happen for 5 years in a row, and then it'll probably crash every 5 to 10 years. That's a pretty normal cycle. If you think back, we always had a GFC in 2009, COVID, dot-com bubble. There's always something that causes the stock market to crash. Does that make sense? So when we compare these portfolios, we need to make sure that you're in good options, that we can't stop them from going up and down. We can't control the weather, but we need to make sure they're doing well compared to the alternatives, if that makes sense. Now, we use a 20% drop as an example. So let's say your super dropped down, and Daniela, because you've got the 70,000 between the two accounts, let's say that dropped to 55. And for Dom, let's say your 115 turned into 95. That'll probably happen again every 5 to 7 years. What would you guys do in that scenario? Would you call us up and sort of say, hey, please sell everything to cash? We don't like what we're seeing. Would you just hold on for a year and let it bounce back? Or would you use it as a buying opportunity and say, yep, let's put the foot on the gas, maybe even throw in a contribution? Okay, and Dom? Perfect. So what I'll do is I'll put you in between the two. That's pretty fair. And the last question is just when your super last dropped in value, which I know it's a bit out of sight, out of mind for you guys. But have you ever seen the super go down, and what feeling does that evoke from you? Is it like a high level of anxiety, some mild concern, or some optimism? Okay, and yeah. No, that's fair. And Dom, do you mimic that or a little bit different? Cool. So based on those answers, you guys have scored high growth, which is where you currently are. And the one thing that I want to kind of discuss with you is the usual time frames is the high growth needs that 10 years or more. So when you are at the last decade, that's probably when we'll look at scaling you back because you're at a 5 out of 5 on the risk scale. And in the last decade, we drop you down from a 5 to a 4 to a 3 to a 2 to a 1. That means that your level of growth assets goes from 90%. 80, 70, 60, 50, 40 over the last decade. Up until that point, we're really just trying to make sure you're in a good super fund with good investments. We're not going to be playing around too much with the risk level, if that makes sense. Okay, now options for you. We do have pretty aggressive portfolios that can invest 100% of your money in growth assets, which are a little bit more volatile. We even have some that borrow a little bit of money. They leverage up to 110, 120% growth assets. Would you consider either of those? Or are you thinking, well, the high growth is probably about as much risk as you'd be willing to take? And that's pretty fair too, because at the moment, we've all seen the news, the wars and the economic situations going on. There's all the chance in the world that before the end of the year or after the end of the year, the market's going to take a nice dive. And then we can always look at some, you know, putting the foot on the gas when it does go down rather than just beforehand. Totally fair. So I'm going to keep you both in the high growth. We may revisit. I mean, would you consider putting additional contributions into both accounts at some point through your working lives? Or do you think that the way your lives are at the moment, it would mainly be Dom that sort of increases contributions over time as work stabilizes? Absolutely. I think that's a pretty reasonable way to approach it too. And that's a lot of what most people do is, you know, the part-time work while the kids are young. Once you go back to full-time and they're in school, there's a bit more surplus cash flow to play with. And then it's an idea of, do we put that into any remaining debt? Do we invest it personally or do we put it into super? Cool. The one thing I wanted to just briefly touch on, Daniela, is your rest account. Their most aggressive investment is the growth option, which is the 4 out of 5 on the risk scale, unless you try and kind of build something out of it, which I don't really recommend with their lack of features. So what I'd probably be looking at doing is just doing a small rollover to top up the other account and still make sure we maintain that minimum balance for the insurances. That's right. So it should be between 10 to 12 grand just to make sure there's a buffer there in case the stock market goes down and the premiums go up in price. Cool. So that's the game plan at the moment is we'll look at a little bit of insurance for Dom. We'll keep you in the high growth, do a small rollover from rest, and we're just going to update your portfolios, particularly the Australian shares options. Before I go through the last area, any questions on those ideas? Okay. Just on the estate planning side of things, now just forgive me while I try and grab up your snapshot again, but I don't believe either of you guys have like a will or power of attorney in place. Is that right? Process. Is that just one of those will kits or? Okay, so in the process. And then I'm just looking at the beneficiaries because guys are nominating each other. Just want to make sure those are all in place. So Dom's got you nominated for 100% non-lapsing binding, so it doesn't expire and it is legally binding. And we'll just have a quick look at the other one. And I'm not 100% sure about the Ally Life Insurance, but I'm assuming because you are in a linked policy that you did end up nominating each other when you put it in place. Yep. When it comes to minors, the thing that I would sort of take into account is that if you leave money behind to them, somebody's got to be in control of that when they're under 18. And if you can, there's a little bit of an idea that you can do through a will. It's called a testamentary trust. Have you heard of that before? So what it basically is, it's especially good for blended families as well. But you can cause a trust fund to trigger inside a will. So if you pass away, a trust fund is opened up and assets and funds can go into that and be distributed out to the children, like give them an income until they're 18, and then they can access it and whatever wishes you want to do. So it's a bit of a fancier type of will, but those are the things that you can do over time. Yep. Otherwise, it's just, you know, nominating each other and then what happens if you both pass away? Who looks after the kids? I did have some clients from England who their entire family was in England, and they were like, well, if we were both in a car accident, who would look after the kids and who would use our finances and funds to look after them? Okay. All right, so the beneficiaries are all in place. I'll just put a note down that you can update the wills and maybe look at a power of attorney. Do you know how the power of attorney works? So that one's more for you're still here, but for example, you're in hospital and you can't act because you're in a coma or something like that. Just making sure that someone who you trust can actually make financial or health-based decisions for you. And it's not as simple as just like, oh, you know, they'll probably just let my husband or wife decide. Because what ends up happening is if you don't have anything in writing, you have to go to the courts and petition them for probate. And that actually takes a bit of time for them to grant you access to be able to do anything while their loved one's just sitting there in hospital. Yeah, so it's kind of like you usually do like a will and power of attorney at the same time. Just see if the kit that you've got allows you to set up the power of attorney or if that's a separate thing. Cool. Any questions on that? If you look at the will kit, you're a bit confused or it's not included, just give us a call back. We'd be happy to sort of point you in the right direction. Cool. So that's pretty much the review done. I've thrown a lot of information at you guys, and there is just a few documents left to run through at the end of that email pack. Any questions at this point? Any thoughts, queries, concerns? So it went up from about 103,000 if you account for, and that's just if I base it on the balance, that's like contributions going in, fees and taxes coming out, and then the actual investment returns being actually, I did get you around the wrong way. Yours was up 10%, Daniela's was up 8.5%. So pretty close. Yeah, so whenever we do the reports for each fund, we spit it out with a net return that takes into account fees and taxes and insurance premiums to make sure that what's actually happened after all costs, we can actually see if you're still on track or not. Say that last bit again. Sorry, Matt, I didn't quite hear the last bit. Oh, I'm with you. So, have you done better in full terms compared to if you just left it where it was, kind of thing? Absolutely. So whenever I do a review, I check what's called a 5-year rolling average and compare that to the rest of the market. I think both of you guys, you're in slightly different portfolios. It averages between 13.5 to 15% over the 5 years. You obviously haven't been in it for a full 5 years. And that's around about, I'm just double checking the ones that you were in at the time. We've got Rest currently. And Dom, who were you with previously? I'm just grabbing up your. Yeah, so if I look at Rest, let me just pull that up. I do apologize. I've got about 19 tabs and documents open at the moment, so I'm just trying to flick back to the first one. All right, we've got the summary there. Here we go. Rest, and yeah, you're with a couple, that's for sure. Bit of a consolidation happened there. So BT Retirement Wrap and Mercer Super Trust. What I can basically say about that is that with the BT Retirement Wrap and Mercer Super Trust, they've got a lot of investment options. So it really depends on what option you were in or you could have been in at the time, if we had kind of chopped and changed it around. If I look at the Rest Fund, I think their 5-year returns are under 10%, as opposed to the sort of 13, 14 of the portfolios we've got you in. So if I'm comparing it to like the major industry funds that you see on the news, you're kind of still ahead by about 3 or 4%. Comparing it to the BT, I know them kind of like the back of my hand. I just know that there's better BT ones out there than the ones that you were in, but we probably could have made something out of it as well. Just wouldn't have been as good. Because we've got like BT Panorama, which is probably their premier option, and we probably wouldn't have left you in that Mercer fund if we had to. We would have just probably changed you to one of their other options. Yeah, BT got hit one of the hardest back then, and they had a pretty brutal run in the news when that happened. Totally fair. And I think one of the things that we always do is, we do these regular reviews, but we're trying to make sure that every 3 to 5 years that you're just averaging out a couple of percent above where you could have been. And it only takes 1 or 2% over 30 years to end up with an extra few hundred thousand dollars kind of thing. And that's kind of what we're aiming for. We're not trying to, make people rich in a day with some crypto investments or anything like that, but just some small changes gradually, big differences at the end of the day. Okay, now a bit of a change for the services for you guys. I know I mentioned probably about 20 minutes ago, do you still have that email up? But can you guys still see the documents that I sent through? So after the super performance, you'll see a Vanguard chart that's got a big red banner at the top. that's just really educational, shows you the stock market and assets over time. But the one after that is our fee disclosure statement. So on the fee disclosure statement, I'm going to bounce between both of yours, but usually we would charge 1.65% each out of the super balance. It does obviously fluctuate with the balance, and when you hit 600,000, it does cap, because you know, when people our age get $2 million in super, paying $40,000 for the same service gets a little bit ridiculous. But that fee disclosure statement, it tells you what you've paid going backwards 12 months, and it's an estimate going forwards for 12 months just based on average returns. Because you're both clients of ours, we've got a bit of a couples discount going on where we'd like to offer you a bit of a drop to the 1.1%, which I'm going to go through each of them individually, but it's on page 3 of that document that says the services we provide and fees we charge. Can either of you guys see that document? Perfect. So Dom, from 1,836, the estimate is 1,271. Obviously, advice fees through Super get like a 15% rebate, where it's a little bit of like a tax deduction for your account. But I just want to make sure in gross terms you understood what you were paying. And Daniela, $803.52 down to $552.23. Again, the exact is going to fluctuate throughout the year. But just wanted to double check that you guys are still comfortable with our services. No worries. Now, beyond that, the fee consent form with each of your providers. So the fee disclosure statement is an agreement between you and us as advisor and clients, but the super fund needs you to sign off that you're comfortable for us to be listed on your accounts, to charge fees and so on. Okay. There should be a slightly different document there at the very end. You'll see a financial services guide, beachfront city logo with a big blue banner. That's just an updated financial services guide. It's like your consumer protections document. It's got like complaints procedure, services, what we can and can't advise on, how we charge, bit more details about us. But the very last one on each DocuSign is a tax file number opt-in form. That might be a bit different than last year, because just with all of the cybersecurity issues, we would rather hold people's tax file numbers because they're important in one document rather than five different systems. So I just want to make sure that you guys are able to consent to us holding that number, because it is important, just making sure you're still okay with us having access to it. Cool. Any questions on the documents, guys? I believe so. And if you get stuck, there's usually like a next button at the top that kind of pulls you to the next spot that's still outstanding. Alrighty. So as far as next steps goes, I'm going to go through that sort of portfolio review over the next few weeks, and then put together a statement of advice, kind of like what you received when you first came on board. There's no extra cost to do any of the advice or changes, but I do need to put it in writing to you guys before I touch anything. The only other thing for yourself, Dom, is just with the insurance side, I'm going to need to get an updated pre-assessment with you, just to go through, you know, health and occupation specifics, so that we do like an anonymous pre-assessment with the insurers just to see what terms they would offer you, just to make sure no, you know, scary things pop up at the very end, and we don't want to waste your time as well. Now, would you have 20 minutes or so this afternoon to go through that with one of our staff, or would you like me to get you booked in? That is totally fine. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to quickly check some availability to get you locked in for that. Before I do so, any questions for me, guys? All righty. That's all right. Do you guys mind if I put you on a quick 10-second hold, just checking some availability for the admin staff? Awesome. I won't be long at all. Thank you. Hello, guys, you're still there. Dom, do you have any availability on potentially like a Monday or a Tuesday, over the next sort of week or two? Next Monday. Easy done. Any time in particular? Alrighty, so what I'll do is I'll get the guys just to give you a call on Monday. If they can't reach you, they'll send you a text. All right, guys, that's everything from me. Any questions before I let you go? Fantastic. So, once that's done, it'll probably take us a couple of weeks to research the insurers. We'll put together a statement of advice. The next time we'll do a joint meeting will probably be in about 4 to 6 weeks, and we'll run through the whole plan together. Awesome, guys. Have a great week. Bye.